Welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. On November 13th, a report written by the company proposing the world's largest frac gas to methanol refinery was released by the Port of Calama in Cowlitz County in Washington. Despite the company's claim that the refinery could result in a climate benefit, the refinery would consume a stunning amount of frac natural gas and pose numerous health and climate risks. Today we speak with Jasmine Zimmer Stuckey, senior organizer with Columbia Riverkeeper, about the dangers this mammoth fossil fuel facility poses for the Pacific Northwest, and for that matter, the world. Jasmine, welcome back to Locus Focus.
Thank you very much.
So I guess for the few people left who don't know about this methanol refinery that they're being proposed for Calama, let's just do a little bit of background on what this facility is and why groups like Columbia Riverkeeper have been up in arms against it.
Yeah, so the proposed Calama methanol refinery is comes in a string, at the end of a string of fossil fuel export terminals. We had a flood of coal terminals starting about a decade ago. A handful of years ago, we had a flood of oil export terminals, and now we are seeing the gas export projects. So this is an extension of sort of the bullseye that the fossil fuel industry has on the Pacific Northwest to export North American natural resources overseas to Asia. So a few years ago, Northwest Innovation Works came to the Pacific Northwest with proposals for 3 fracked gas to methanol export terminals. So the idea is they would bring in gas in pipelines, refine it into liquid methanol, and ship it overseas to China to either make into olefins, which is an ingredient for plastics, or burn it as fuel. They had 3 proposals. The first was in Tacoma. The residents of Tacoma stood up, asked tough questions, hard questions. They were backed by a lot of their city leaders, and Northwest Innovation Works packed up their bags and left. So Tacoma had a quick, brief encounter with Northwest Innovation Works, and they won. That resulted in Northwest Innovation Works doubling down on their project in Calama. And for folks listening in Oregon, there is a proposal, an identical proposal, in Oregon at Port Westward near Clatskanie, which has been kind of under the radar. The company has been focusing mostly on Calama, but they do have a live active lease for a facility at Port Westward that would be identical in size to Port West or to Calama, which we're here to talk about today.
And actually, it's kind of interesting because the facility in Tacoma was going to be twice the size of the current proposed facility in Calama. But when you add the Calama and the Port Westward facilities together, we're back to the size of the one in Tacoma.
Exactly.
It's sort of an interesting kind of sleight of hand here. Well, we've talked actually a bunch on the show about a lot of the concerns about methanol, and we'll talk a bit more about that in a bit. But I wanted to kind of jump ahead to like what's happening lately. There's been a rash of public hearings, and I'd like to tie in today the public hearing that we're going to be talking about that's happening in Longview next week for the Calama Supplemental Environmental Impact Statement, and tie that in with the one that just happened last month in Tacoma for the proposed LNG hybrid, very amazing facility they want to build there, which actually is getting built without a permit, because there's a lot of similarities, particularly in the supplementary environmental impact statement. So let's talk a little bit about why the supplemental environmental impact statement for Calama methanol is so similar to the one for Tacoma LNG.
Right. So a few years ago, the environmental review for Calama was published, and groups Columbia Riverkeeper, Sierra Club, and Center for Biological Diversity found that the final document was inadequate. And we filed a lawsuit on a number of different grounds against the environmental impact statement. And we filed that lawsuit to the Washington State Shorelines Hearing Board. And the Shorelines Hearing Board ruled in our favor, gave us partial summary judgment, and agreed that the greenhouse gas analysis for the Calama methanol refinery was in fact inadequate, and that the company needed to do a cradle-to-grave life cycle analysis of the project, which is especially critical for any gas project, because the way that, you know, gas pollutes our climate is slightly different than, you know, how coal pollutes our climate. Gas leaks from methane gas, you know, leaks from the fracking wells, it leaks from the pipelines, it leaks from the compressor stations, it leaks from the facility, and then you have the end product, which is a pollutant as well. So you have to look at the life cycle in order to really understand what's happening with how fracked gas is polluting our climate.
And actually, you didn't mention that before it starts leaking, there's all these issues with fracking itself, because most of this gas is now being fracked in British Columbia and Alberta.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I'm kind of interested, because my sense from what you're saying is that the lawsuit that you guys filed 2 years ago actually predated the decision by Puget Sound Clean Air Agency to require that the Tacoma LNG project also have to do a life cycle analysis of its methane carbon pollution. Is that true, that you actually were maybe the impetus for the Tacoma project to have to go through some more scrutiny?
Well, I don't sit at the table at the Puget Sound Clean Air Agency, so I'm not entirely sure what made them choose to do a life cycle greenhouse gas analysis for the Tacoma LNG project. However, the Calama project had already been ordered to do this life cycle greenhouse gas analysis, so perhaps the Puget Sound Clean Air Agency, you know, saw that the writing was on the wall and that the standard was being created, established in Calama, so they should apply it to their own project.
Well, the time that I've been spending in Tacoma in the last year, people up until a couple months ago were really excited by what they saw as a precedent-setting event in Calama, with this SEIS being, which stands for people who are listening, Supplementary Environmental Impact Statement. And I think that Jasmine and I are going to want to just refer to it as the SEIS from now on. But the people in Tacoma saw that as really groundbreaking, and I thought that was a very good indicator for hopes for them to stop the LNG facility in Tacoma. Interestingly, when the SEIS in Tacoma came out, it was full of major errors, omissions, and strange assumptions, and a lot of typos. And it was very discouraging, though. The hearings, which we're going to be playing next week on this show, we'll be playing excerpts from the testimony people gave at the hearing on October 30th in Tacoma. But there, people really stood up. All the scientists in the community were up there really exposing all the fallacies of that SEIS. Well, what is the difference between the SEIS for Calama and the one that is being pulled apart in Tacoma?
Well, the supplemental EIS for Calama and the supplemental EIS for the Tacoma project were done by the same consultant. So in some places, you know, you can see direct sort of drag and drop calculations being made, assumptions being made. I think some of the biggest issues, you know, it is groundbreaking and precedent setting to have a life cycle greenhouse gas analysis for you know, these big fossil fuel projects. This is, you know, 2018, almost 2019. We should be looking at cradle to grave emissions, but we have to be looking at them properly. And the way that this project was done, you know, it was clear that you know, industry had, you know, their thumb on the outcome, on the scales, and really weighed in on the outcome of this project. So you have, you know, these documents making outrageous assumptions, like, you know, for the lifespan of these projects, which are 40 years according to their own, you know, industry documents, all gas will come from this one fracking region of northern British Columbia and Alberta, Canada. It will not come from the Rockies. It will not come from anywhere else except for this, you know, small shale formation. And that's really beneficial to these gas companies, you know, like Northwest Innovation Works in Calama and the Tacoma LNG facility, because there is a study that was done about this one formation in Canada that shows it has a very low methane leakage rate compared to studies done in the U.S. Rockies. So they want to try and convince us that all of their gas for 40 years will come from this one region, and this one region exclusively. This is a confusing argument because we share pipelines. Pipelines go, you know, bidirectionally. Once the gas is in the pipeline, there's no sort of separating it for these specific companies, and so that is pretty bizarre that claim was made in Tacoma and then repeated again in Calama.
And then again, there was a difference in the what's considered by most scientists, just about, well, and every scientist who testified in Tacoma last month, that when you're going to be measuring the greenhouse gas emissions, and it's the intensity of greenhouse gas emissions of methane, which is what fracked natural gas is, that you need to look at the 20-year levels, because methane is really potent in the beginning, and then it fizzles out in the last 80 years of its lifespan. But these studies both use the 100-year milestone as opposed to the 20-year.
Right. Yeah, you can look at the impacts of fracked gas in two ways, the impacts on it, the short term and the long term. So short term being 20 years into our future and long term being 100 years. If you believe that we need to take climate action in the short term, then you should look at the short term impacts of these fracked gas projects on our climate. If you want to make fracked gas look clean and green, then you try and convince people that climate action can happen in 100 years, and you use these long-term impacts of gas. So it really comes down to, do we want climate action in the short term, or do we want climate action in 100 years? And based on how you answer that question, that's how, you know, fracked gas companies are trying to convince you that these projects are clean and green, because they're trying to push it off to 100 years from now.
Well, interestingly, the SEIS for Tacoma was released on October 8th, which was the same day that that now very famous report came out that we've got 12 years to do something about climate change and greenhouse emissions before it's over.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the day after Thanksgiving, there was the other federal study released around the impacts of climate change, which spoke specifically to the impacts that the Northwest is already experiencing because of climate change. And we had a community meeting yesterday up in Kalama, talking to people about the supplemental environmental impact statement and how to write comments. And one of the most compelling or powerful moments for me was when I asked people to raise their hand if they knew someone or if they personally had been affected by the impacts of climate change. And I listed, you know, shorter fishing seasons, extreme wildfires, extreme winters, flooding and landslides. And towards the end, everyone had their hands up. And so it's not just, you know, it's everyday folks who are feeling the experiences, who are directly being impacted by climate change. And, you know, this is their chance to speak up and stop new fossil fuel infrastructure and try and curb that for their community and, you know, the rest of the region.
Well, in Tacoma, what a lot of people were mentioning in their testimony was all the smoke last summer. And we thought we had it bad here. I think the smoke in Seattle and Tacoma was about twice as bad. I think they were up at like 250 or higher particulate per billion, whatever. So it seems like we are really we're experiencing it very directly now. And it's very odd to me that I feel like they're climate deniers, even though they all proclaim to be environmentalists, people who are pushing for fracked gas in the Northwest, but they are just kind of ignoring what people's everyday experiences are becoming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and these companies, you know, Northwest Innovation Works, you know, they claim their new tagline is, you know, confronting climate change. And, you know, you know, it's a backwards world where a company says, we're going to frack for more gas, we're going to build more pipelines, we're going to export more natural resources to China to make plastics or be burned as fuel, and that is how we confront climate change. I would challenge anyone to look at any scientific document and see if they see any of those ways, you know, more fracking, more pipelines, more exporting of natural resources as a way of combating climate change. It is like a twilight zone.
Yes. Well, you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPFM in Seattle, and you are not going through the Twilight Zone here. Maybe we're coming through the other door and coming back to reality, because we're talking with Jasmine Zimmer-Stuckey, who's a senior organizer with Columbia Riverkeeper, this morning about the dangers that the world's largest methanol refinery proposed for Kalama, Washington, poses for the Pacific Northwest and for the rest of the world. You mentioned the studies that the SEIS used in both Tacoma and Kalama to show that they were going to be getting fracked gas from this very narrow place in British Columbia where they have less, it's like 0.3% emissions of leakage, as opposed to other places where it can be up as high as 17% of the gas actually leaks on its way to where it's going. And my understanding, because the people in Tacoma did a lot of research on where these studies came from, and that particular study was somebody's graduate research paper. It wasn't even somebody who had gotten their PhD yet. And the other thing, I understand that the person who wrote the paper sort of had a lot of provisos about it. I mean, he wasn't actually saying, oh, this is definite. This is just the study that I found, and it may actually be an anomaly. And then it was also pointed out, while they're talking about the gas coming from British Columbia, that the study was actually of a field in Alberta. So it just is an example of the kind of fast and loose playing that they do with facts and with studies. And I'm wondering, in the analysis that people are doing here around the methanol refinery, SEIS, are you finding similar giant gaps in the research?
Yeah, and it's so important to dive into those details because we are in a public comment period, you know, now through December 28th to make this supplemental environmental impact statement better. So we have to highlight all of these sort of errors or all the ways that really the company Northwest Innovation Works and cherry-picked. They found these very extreme oddball outlier studies that made their project look very favorable. Tacoma LNG, they did the same thing.
And a lot of them are the exact same studies, too.
Oh, the exact same studies. So fortunately, we have a wealth of information from Tacoma that can inform the Calama project. But, you know, just as a reference, you know, 0.32%, you know, methane leakage rate is incredibly low. And you know, even like the EPA uses, you know, a leakage rate of 1.1%. And, you know, that doesn't maybe mean a lot to, you know, the average person. But when you multiply that by the amount of fracking in these, you know, the lifetime of these projects, 40 years, and, you know, the largest fracked gas to methanol refinery in the world, you know, those percentage changes make a huge difference. And so it's just, it's incredibly bizarre that these companies think that they can just cherry pick their studies and convince us that investing in more fossil fuels is the way to get us to a cleaner energy future.
Actually, there was a climate scientist in Tacoma who testified, and she pointed out that any leakage rate above 1% is actually disastrous for the climate. It makes gas worse than coal. And you get up to 3%, which is much more common, then it's really disastrous. And it was interesting that it was interesting to me to hear like the climate scientists and and a whole bunch of other scientists getting up and speaking very forcefully with very specific figures. And then the proponents of the LNG terminal or LNG facility talking about how they had science on their side. Is that something that you're coming across the same in Calama, that the proponents of the methanol refinery are saying that they have science?
They're definitely referring to this study as an independent third-party review, but it's very clear that, I mean, how the Northwest Innovation Works paid for the study, so it's third-party to some extent, and good reminder that the agencies that are overseeing this entire environmental review process are the Port of Calama and Cowlitz County, who, you know, are slated to make a windfall of cash if this project moves forward. I mean, the Port of Calama is already accepting lease money from the facility and, you know, accepting rent for their offices. And the, you know, in Cowlitz County, you know, is already, you know, their commissioners are already in favor of this project. So, you know, it's a lot of people cooking the books to try and make this fracked gas facility look like a green energy project. And I think that folks who in the Northwest who've stood up for clean energy, you know, we've made great strides in the Northwest. We have a reputation and for being, you know, climate leaders. And what we're seeing right now is the gas industry trying to sort of piggyback onto the progress that people have made and you know, slide their dirty fracked gas projects in and hope that we don't notice.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about all these people who, in Tacoma, these people would stand up and say, I'm an environmentalist. And you knew as soon as they said that they were supporting LNG and that they were coming up with all these kind of bogus reasons. But it's interesting to see how it seems to be a necessity for any project that comes on board now. And that, I think even Vancouver Energy claimed that they were environmentalists when they were proposing the largest, North America's largest oil by rail terminal in Vancouver. How do we counter that? Because I think that sometimes those arguments can be compelling to people who don't really understand what's going on.
Right. Well, we have really great tools in our toolbox. You know, the United Nations climate study that came out in October said, you know, we need to take serious action on climate in the next 12 years. And nowhere does it say, you know, let's build new fossil fuel infrastructure. You know, we have a history in the Northwest of standing up to these fossil fuel export terminals, and this is no different. So we can stand on the shoulders of science and our victories here in the Northwest and really make sure that we hold the line against, you know, all fossil fuel export terminals, because we have to start shifting the kinds of infrastructure that we invest in. If we invest in dirty energy, we're going to get dirty energy or dirty, you know, pollution. We have to, you know, change that narrative to looking into renewable energy and wind and solar and reductions in our own, you know, consumption. Those are the ways that we, you know, transition away from, you know, climate chaos.
Well, I was thinking about an interview I did back in June with several people at the Port of Tacoma. And this one man that I was talking to was, first of all, thinking it was very odd that both the Tacoma LNG project and the Calama Methanol project were being required to do life cycle analyses. It seemed very odd to be limiting a jurisdiction or trying to put limits on a jurisdiction's ability to be able to build a project based on its impact in other parts of the world. And we've sort of said, well, it is climate change, and that it doesn't really matter where you start, it all winds up affecting the planet. So after setting that up, it's like, I really don't think this life cycle analysis is necessary or even legal. Then he went on to say that he would not be surprised if, when they do the life cycle analysis for Calama Methanol, that they would find that it was actually a benefit because of how it's going to be reducing carbon emissions in China, because they will no longer be using coal to make methanol. Yeah. And he said that with a certain kind of self-satisfaction, almost like he was talking with Life Cycle, the guys who did this, in the SEISs, and already knew that that was already in the works.
Well, to his first question about whether these supplemental environmental impact statements are legal, they are incredibly legal. They were ordered by a Washington state court. So, you know, this is the law that the court allowed. No, and you know, for him to just say I doubt that this is legal just shows that he's got a pretty small grasp of our legal system.
I'm not sure if he said legal, but he thought it was a strange protocol. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, but it seemed to him like something that was really impinging on the ability of local jurisdictions to make their own regulations and to monitor themselves, so to speak.
Was a Washington state court ruling, so it wasn't too far away from local for him. But going back to your thought about, you know, this comparing of fracked gas to coal, you know, we have to get beyond that. You know, depending on where you fall on the leakage rates, fracked gas can be as bad as coal, worse than coal, or marginally better. And when you think about the kind of climate progress that we need to be making, marginal doesn't come to mind. The word marginal, like let's make marginal climate progress, I mean, that's absurd. We aren't trying to make marginal climate progress. We're trying to make monumental climate progress. And so shifting from one fossil fuel to another, I mean, listeners can't see this, but I'm like trying to do the biggest eye roll that possible, because it's simply not how we... the kind of action that we need to be taking. With Northwest Innovation Works, they are making this claim that they will frack gas in North America, refine it into liquid methanol in Calama, ship it overseas to China, and that methanol that arrives on a ship in China is going to displace future, not current, future coal to olefin facilities in China. They cannot and have not produced any documents that have said these five facilities won't be built. They're proposed, but they've agreed to go offline in China if our facility starts shipping methanol. So they're asking us to look into a crystal ball that they create and believe them. And at the end of the day, I mean, they're a fossil fuel company trying to make money. Like, that's their bottom line. So they're going to tell us what they want us to think, because they have, you know, a financial prerogative. You know, the methanol market, you know, Northwest Innovation Works does not control the methanol market in North America or in China. So, you know, it varies to say that they are going to displace or be more competitive with methanol projects in China, you know, based on, you know, their future calculations. It's a huge stretch. They're asking us to take a giant leap of faith, like a Grand Canyon leap of faith, and believe them. And I think that the facts aren't there. I think that this analysis and how it was produced using such cherry-picked information really discredits Northwest Innovation Works. It shows that they are willing to outright mislead people. And I think it's really telling of the kind of manipulation that they want to bring to our region.
Well, the thing that really struck me, maybe the strongest, was just that the SEIS's for Tacoma and Kalama are so similar, and that they use all the same data, actually contradictory data points, because data changes around. I mean, they use one amount for one part of the report, and then a few pages later, they're using a different figure. And there's also things where the tables don't line up, and it's just, and actually I have to admit I haven't read the Kalama one thoroughly, because when I just read the bullet points that Columbia Riverkeeper sent out and was like, oh, this sounds just like Tacoma, which I did read the entire thing, in which I found massive typos, or including paragraphs that were just completely repeated with one sentence at the end. Somebody, it was the laziest editing I'd ever seen. So it seems like everything from the way it was written to the actual research that went into it is just incredibly shoddy, and that they thought they could get away with it. But to me, the fact that the two reports are so identical is an indication of the fallacy, the shared fallacy that both projects have, and that, in fact, it really highlights it in ways that I'm not sure they intended to.
Yeah, and I also, you know, am really curious when people try and make this, you know, gas is cleaner than coal argument, you know, what I want to say to them is like, where were you when there was a proposed, you know, coal export terminal in Longview? Did you oppose that? And your Northwest Innovation Works, they didn't oppose the coal export terminal just downriver from them in Longview. So many of the proponents of the Northwest Innovation Works projects either supported, we'll just say downright supported, these coal export terminals. So when they're trying to make these sort of comparisons about what's cleaner, what's better, the record shows that, you know, it's a fossil fuel. They support all fossil fuels. They're not interested in, you know, climate action. They're interested in fossil fuel export.
Well, I'm also curious about where some environmental groups stand on this, because it seems like it's taken a long time for a lot of environmental groups to appreciate the dangers of frack gas. And in fact, I've heard people criticize Columbia Riverkeeper who was so focusing so much on coal and oil, not to get the seriousness of fracked gas. Though, you've been up in Longview for years, right? And you seem to get wind about the methanol refinery pretty early on.
Yeah, this is. I mean, I think that the Northwest has a lot of opportunities to catch up in terms of fracked gas. You know, I think that we are only, you know, at the very beginning of the gas industry's attempts to, you know, use our regions, use our ports to export gas overseas, or to take over our grids, you know, or prevent clean energy from coming on. I think we have a lot of distance to travel before we can really, you know, say we have a clean energy future. Gas is still a huge threat. And there are, you know, and the gas industry has been watching the decline of the coal industry. They've learned from those mistakes, those errors, and they branded themselves in a really shiny way that unfortunately confuses a lot of people. And these projects, you know, are in small towns and depressed communities, far from media. And it's, you know, relatively easy for these projects to come in and steamroll a community and make it feel like a done deal. So we are in the process of, you know, every day kind of unraveling that or pushing back against that steamroll to make people aware of the power that they have. And, you know, when we combine community power, you know, with legal power and smart organizing, like, you can do a lot. And Kalama is a great example of how you can do a lot with just, you know, those three ingredients coming together. And we're grateful to have the, you know, the support of groups like Sierra Club and the Physicians for Social Responsibility, Center for Biological Diversity. I mean, and I could go on and on. The 350 groups across the region have been incredibly powerful and helpful. These groups are helping to hold the line against what is the the greenwashing that the gas industry is trying to do.
Well, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Locust Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPFM in Seattle. And today we're talking with Jasmine Zimmer-Stuckey, senior organizer with Columbia Riverkeeper, about the dangers that the world's largest methanol refinery proposed for Kalama, Washington, poses for the Pacific Northwest and the rest of the world. Well, actually, it's true that I think most people in the Northwest were focused on coal and then on oil for many years. But I think back to the very early fossil fuel projects that were proposed for the Northwest. The first one that pops into my mind is Oregon LNG. I'm not sure what the iteration was, but the numerous LNG terminals in Bradford Landing and then in Warrenton, both right near Astoria. Shortly after that came Jordan Cove. And I remember when I was working on my last documentary that was mainly stimulated by the proposed oil by rail terminal in Vancouver. And I talked with your colleague, Dan Sears, who was the star of that show. And he said, you need to talk about LNG and you should go to Astoria, which I wound up doing. And it was a real eye-opener to see the challenges in 2004, 2005, for people to get their communities to understand what LNG was, because nobody had ever heard of it, and to understand that, oh, this natural gas that I use for my barbecue or my stove or my furnace is bad. And I think back to when I was at this, it was in a environmental journalist workshop back in 2002, I think, and people were talking about the bridge to the future, you know, the bridge fuel to the future. And the debate at that time was between natural gas and nuclear power. And that was only 16 years ago. So I think that I kind of like to look at what have we learned from the early LNG battles and what can we take from those to where we're going now? And I guess the other part of the question is, and what happened in the meantime? Why did frack gas drop off the radar for us in the Northwest so long when we were fighting oil and coal trains?
Yeah, well, when we began fighting LNG terminals, liquefied natural gas terminals in the Columbia Estuary, we were fighting gas import terminals. We were being told that we are going to have an energy crisis here in America, that we need to import liquefied natural gas from, you know, the Gulf regions of the Middle East and Africa, and that this was going to secure our energy future. We had to import. And I applaud the people who did the research, who stood up and said, I don't think that's right. I think that that's PR. I think it's PR spin saying this is going to help you import gas so you can keep your lights on. Because shortly after, you know, these projects started to take ground, we learned that their true intention was to export, was to get the permits under the guise of import because that felt more palatable, apparently, and then flip them into gas export terminals because we were on the horizon of implementing this thing in America called hydraulic fracturing, which opened up massive amounts of gas wells that were previously inaccessible. So these companies came in and they said, we want to import gas, but really behind closed doors, they said, we're actually going to use these to export gas. So we learned very early on not to trust the gas industry, that they're really working on their bottom line, using branding and messaging that makes people feel safe and clean and secure and green. So we learned early on not to trust them. And I think we need to go back to that lesson when we look at this environmental review that, you know, this company just released in Kalama that says, you know, this is the cleanest, greenest project and it's going to, you know, reduce carbon emissions. You know, there's no way that building the world's largest fracked gas to methanol refinery reduces carbon emissions. It's more pipelines. It's more fracking. That's all it is. So it reminds me of those early days when we learned just not to trust them, that they're after, you know, their own, you know, fulfilling their own shareholders, you know, pocketbooks, and they don't really have much of an interest in what, you know, communities and, you know, small town communities in the Columbia River Estuary, you know, they're not interested in their well-being.
Well, an interesting development happened just a couple of days ago. I received an email from change.org, which has been sponsoring petitions to stop the LNG Tacoma facility. And it turns out that the Attorney General of Washington and the Department of Ecology in Washington wrote some very searing comments for the proposed LNG facility in Tacoma. One of my favorite lines, first of all, there's two parts to it. One of it is it seems like a lot of these comments are, in fact, very relevant to the SEIS that's now being debated for Kalama. The one comment that was not specifically, it wouldn't relate to Kalama, because one of the differences between the two facilities, the Kalama is still unbuilt. It's unbroken ground. In Tacoma, they've been building this tank, an 8 million gallon tank for LNG. They've been building it for the last 2 years, and it's just about finished. They don't have any permits, or they don't have all their permits in place, including this particular clean air permit. And in the draft supplemental environmental impact statement, they use the two scenarios. One is to go ahead and build this terminal as they are planning. The other is the so-called no-action alternative. But, of course, if you look at it, the no-action alternative doesn't exist anymore because they built the terminal, or they built the tank. And, in fact, the Attorney General refers to the SEIS that evaluates a no-action alternative can only be described as fictional. And I thought that was pretty strong language. Now, on the other hand, the Department of Ecology makes some points that are very relevant to specifically to Kalama, and that has to do with where the gas is coming from. And one point that they make that I didn't hear anybody in Tacoma address was, and it's kind of what you were saying about how we don't really even control where our gas comes from in the pipelines, but that, in fact, if this project, either Kalama or Tacoma, were to take all this gas from British Columbia, and they would use this supposedly low leakage gas, the rest of Washington and Oregon is then going to be more reliant on Rocky Mountain gas, which leaks a lot. So I wonder how that is going to, these two components might impact the hearing next week in Longview on the Kalama methanol refinery, and if this gives more weight to the opposition.
I think that this is incredibly telling, you know, about how these, you know, Northwest Innovation Works is so willing to cook the books in their favor. I mean, they don't have contracts. Their facility, according to their own documents, is going to run for 40 years. We're going to have the world's largest fracked gas and methanol refinery on the Columbia for 40 years, according to this company. They don't have contracts that provide them exclusive rights to this gas from this one region in northern British Columbia. There's no way to separate the gas in the pipeline as it comes down from British Columbia. And you're absolutely right. So maybe there is, you know, a facility or a shale formation that has a lighter, smaller leakage rate than other facilities. But that just means that the rest of the Northwest will be relying on dirtier energy. So it's just, you know, it's wishful thinking, I guess, is a polite way to put it, that these companies can, you know, try and convince us that they're going to have the exclusive rights to this one area. And you know, I'll bring back up again, you know, there was one study that was done about this one shale formation in Canada that allegedly has this low leakage rate. It's not like it's a universally agreed upon fact. I mean, leakage rates change from year to year, which is why the gas industry really needs to be held accountable for their pollution, because it is so widespread and so rampant, and it changes over time, you know, with the way equipment degrades, for example.
And actually also under the latter years of Obama, there was some clamps being put down on methane leakage from frack gas facilities and pipelines. I understand the Trump administration has lifted all those constraints. So that's the other background that we're playing in, is that there's no, or that right now, at least until we change things in Washington, there's no federal constraints on the kind of leakage that's going to be allowed by these different gas facilities.
Right, the backstops are being removed rapidly in terms of all environmental protections around, you know, fossil fuel extraction. It's happening across the board. And so the only way that we can, you know, put those backstops in place or push back against that unraveling is to really get clean energy. You know, it's to not buy these lies from the gas industry that this is a clean, green product. Just say, like, outright, you know, we want renewable energy, not something that is a finite resource that you have to frack from the ground.
So what can people do to get involved in this, and how can they get more information about this hearing that's coming up? Let's first of all talk about the hearing next week in Longview and what's going to happen there and how people can be involved.
Yeah, so the hearing is on this Supplemental Environmental Impact Statement, and you can find links to it. You can find talking points on the Columbia Riverkeeper website. And we will need, you know, everyone we can to be there. So, you know, clear your schedules, bring a friend, you know, carpool up to Longview. So the facility is actually in Kalama, but Kalama doesn't have a venue large enough to accommodate everyone who wants to talk about this project. So the hearing is held in the Fairgrounds building, which is in Longview.
Do you have the address in your mind? It's on the website. We have all this information on our website. And I can probably pull that address out while one of us will pull
it. Okay. Here.
1900
7th Avenue, Longview, Washington, Cowlitz County Event Center. So the hearing, we're asking people to arrive at 5 o'clock, and the hearing runs from 6 to 9 p.m. If you want to give testimony, I encourage you to show up before 5 o'clock because we actually don't know what kind of format the hearing moderators are going to use, whether it's a first-come, first-serve or a random, you know, draw names from a hat. So if you have compelling things to say, which hopefully after listening to the show and reading some stuff online, you will, you know, show up early, get in line, and make sure that you have one of those, you know, spots to speak, because the hearing is only 3 hours long.
Which is very short, actually.
Which is actually, yeah, pretty short compared to some of the previous fossil fuel hearings. You know, fortunately, we have until the 28th of December to submit all your comments. So if you can't get everything said in your 2 minutes at the mic at the hearing on the 13th, you can write pages upon pages upon pages and submit it all the way up until 5 p.m. on December 28th.
It's only 5 p.m., eh? Sometimes it's midnight, but... And also, for those who would be coming from Portland, I would recommend allowing at least an hour and a half travel time to Longview, unless you leave earlier in the afternoon.
Or you can get in the carpool lane and zip right up.
That's right. Well, it's not a zip even in the carpool lane at that time. And I've done it a few times. So just allow plenty of travel time. And yeah, we definitely recommend carpooling. And I'm going to put on the Locus Focus website a link for how to get in touch with the carpool people. And you'll be talking to Bonnie to find that out. And I want to let you know that you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPFM in Seattle. We're talking today with Jasmine Zimmer-Stuckey, who's senior organizer with Columbia Riverkeeper, about the world's largest methanol refinery being proposed for Kalama, Washington, and how to get involved in trying to stop it. And there's going to be a hearing a week from Thursday, December 13th at 6 o'clock from 6 to 9 at the Cowlitz County Event Center, I think it's called now, which is really the fairgrounds. And a place, if you've gone to the previous Millennium Coal Terminal hearings, you'll be very familiar with this location. I wanted to move just for a few moments to another fracked gas that I understand, and I don't have a lot of information on this, so I'm going to throw this out and see how much you know, but I keep hearing about this anhydrous ammonia terminal or some kind of anhydrous ammonia facility that's being proposed for the Terminal 2 in Portland.
Yeah, so the bigger landscape of fracked gas projects in the Northwest is the gas industry is doing anything and everything they can to liquefy gas and ship it overseas because there's no pipeline to Asia under, you know, the Pacific Ocean. If
yet.
Yet, right? So in any, you know, in almost any and every form, we're seeing projects that use gas, fracked gas as a feedstock, either liquefy it or refine it into something slightly different and ship it overseas. What's happening in Portland, and there was a KGW story about it about 2 weeks ago, so I encourage folks to go online and check that out. There's an existing anhydrous ammonia. So anhydrous ammonia, just really briefly, is a a chemical that's used in fertilizer. So it's incredibly caustic. It's, you know, very toxic and dangerous, but it's used in the agricultural industry. There's an existing anhydrous ammonia facility at Terminal 2 in Portland, and it's been operating below capacity for, I think, since it was built and permitted years and years ago. The company Simplot recently announced in a press release that they are going to ramp up production. It's going to come back online, and we should expect to see, you know, anhydrous ammonia exports out of Portland. The anhydrous ammonia would come in on rail unit trains to the Terminal 2 facility in Portland. And I just think it's a little, you know, we've already seen dangers of oil by rail, and I think we're only starting to see the beginnings of all of these other chemicals being transported by rail in large unit trains. So that's a concern for a lot of people. If you go up to Longview, you have an anhydrous ammonia refinery proposed, a brand new one. So this is just, again, we're starting to see more and more ways of trying to get gas in some liquid form to be shipped overseas to Asia. It's really going to be important to, you know, distinguish between, you know, what is clean energy and what is dirty energy, dangerous energy, you know, and what takes us backwards.
So is the Simplot plan to expand their export of anhydrous ammonia a done deal, or is there a way to stop that?
You know, I'm not acutely aware of the, I'm not extremely aware of the permitting process, but I do believe that they are simply operating at their, you know, expanding their operations to their, you know, full permitted capacity.
So our infrastructure ban on fossil fuel storage bears no weight for this situation.
It's possible, yeah, that it wouldn't.
Yeah, I mean, and Simplot, I got familiar with them years ago when I was driving back and forth through the Sacramento Valley a whole lot, and they have big facilities down in the Central Valley in California. And I was looking for some images of chemical fertilizers for a documentary we're doing on sustainable agriculture, and then discovered there was Simplot here in Portland. So I'm wondering what the relationship is between that Simplot facility there and the much larger corporate behemoth that they are.
You know, I guess I don't know the, yeah. I mean, it's the same company. So I'm
not... Yeah. I mean, it's just interesting. These things are here in Portland. And I think we've been spending a lot of time over the last 15 years being concerned about fossil fuel projects in other parts of the region. And except with the exception of Pembina, which is where I first heard of you, fighting the Pembina liquid propane terminal was proposed for Portland. That was the first time that it kind of hit home very viscerally. But it sounds to me like there's always other dangers in the port of Portland as much, or maybe not quite as much as in some of the smaller ports, but that we have to be keeping a real eye on what's going on here.
I think it's important to remember that that the decisions that are being made today are going to, you know, stay with us for decades and decades, just like we see that the decisions made a decade ago are you know, rearing up today. So we, you know, we have to be very careful about the kind of infrastructure that we allow, how, you know, we allow it close to the river, close to homes. Does it come in by rail? Is the rail safe? Does it come in by the river? What impacts does it have to the river? And you know, we really do have to have that comprehensive understanding of new projects, because, you know, we will be forced to live with them for 40 or 50 years.
Well, another thing I've been wondering about, there's been all this energy into changing the port commissions in outlying areas. The most successful example was the port of Vancouver, Washington, which now has a majority of people who support sustainable development and are opposed to any future fossil fuel development at that port. And I know there's talk about trying to change the commission composition in other communities that are being faced with these massive fossil fuel projects. But what about the Port of Portland? Anybody put any focus? I don't even know much about what's going on at the port there and who's on it and what their stance is and all these things.
So the Port of Portland is actually a unique situation in that those are positions that are appointed by the governor. So they're not elected. To really dive into the history of the Port of Portland, you know, I would refer you to the Audubon Society that has been working for years, you know, on reforming the port. The Port of Portland has been a a hindrance in terms of the Willamette Superfund cleanup, the development of West Hayden Island. So there have been a lot of things that, you know, just if you track it in the news, that the port has been, you know, on opposite sides of environmental organizations in Portland.
Well, getting back to Longview on December 13th, what can people do to gird themselves for what's going to be happening? What can they expect? And what briefly would you suggest people think about when they're making their comments?
Yeah, I would definitely go online to ColumbiaRiverKeeper.org and RSVP for the hearing. Check out the sample comment that we have and try and adapt that to your own. It's important to RSVP because we want to be able to give you the information about the hearing that we don't know yet. The hearing officers just haven't released it. If I could tell you now, I would. But critical information about the hearing, like, you know, what time the doors open, what kind of testimony you're allowed to give, 2 or 3 minutes, that information is still forthcoming from the hearing agencies. So if you RSVP, we can follow up and give you that information once we have it ourselves. Talk about the climate. Talk about, you know, what clean energy really is. You know, talk about the ways that the fossil fuel industry has misled the Northwest in the past. And talk about the kind of community and region that you want to see. You know, make it personal. If you experienced a climate, you know, related, you know, impact, like wildfires or floods or, you know, tsunamis, and you know, talk about that in your testimony. Make people aware that climate change, you know, is happening now, and, you know, we can't take action in 100 years. We can't use these analyses that hope for action in 100 years. We have to take a short-term approach to the impacts of fracked gas.
And actually, I'm thinking about some resources. Next week on the show, we'll be airing excerpts from the testimony that was given at the hearing in Tacoma on October 30th. And I'd say that probably at least 50 to 60% of the testimony that was given is totally relevant to Kalama. The rest of it is specific to LNG and specific to Puget Sound Energy, the company that is wanting to build this facility in Tacoma. So that'll be one resource. And there's also videos online that give people a sense of testimony. So we have on our website, right now I think we're linked to 350 PDX, but we'll also put Columbia Riverkeeper on so people can sign up and get involved. And again, we'll have a link for how to carpool up there. And the other part of, I want to give people a sense of the lay of the land when they get up to the event center, where to go. Is there going to be, as usual, a hospitality room there? Or has NWIW taken all over?
So when folks get to the Cowlitz County Event Center, the first thing to remember is you have to park in the field across the street. So, you know, wear sturdy shoes. It's going to be dark. It's probably going to be raining.
Dress warm.
Dress warm, yeah. You'll walk into the Event Center grounds, and you will, you know, you can go check in inside the Event Center, and you're also welcome to come to the hospitality suite that's hosted by the coalition of groups, environmental groups who are opposing this project, and the community of Kalama. That's going to be in what's called the agricultural building. The rally starts at 5 o'clock, so
it'll be inside.
And it will be inside, yeah. So you won't have to
worry
too much about getting wet. But yeah, just remember to look for the hospitality suite for the anti-Kalama methanol project. Sign in, get your name on the list to speak. If it's a lottery, you know, grab a ticket, even if you don't plan to speak, because if you win, you can give it that ticket to someone who does want to speak.
And as my recollection is, as you're going down 7th, and it's a ways down. Also, it's the third Longview exit. No, it's the first Longview exit. It's the Tally Road exit, I think.
You can get to it from either way,
right,
from any Longview exit.
Yeah, and so if you go get off there and you go down to 7th, which is a little bit arduous, but you'll figure it out. And you park on the left side of the road, and the event center's on the right side, if I recall.
Well, depending on which way you go, instead of being left and right, you park, it'll be very obvious, but you park on the west side of the road, and the hearing is on the east side of the road.
And if things are the way they've usually been when I've been up there, there'll be a whole lot of red signs and a whole lot of blue signs. The red signs say no methanol, and the blue signs say yes methanol. Mm-hmm. And so you'll know you're there when you see all those signs.
Right.
One last thing I want to talk about is the community of Kalama. because this is a community that I think a lot of Portlanders are not very familiar with. It's just those cute little Victorian houses on the hill as you're heading up someplace else north. But who are these people in Kalama, and how has this fight really transformed the community?
This has been a very impressive fight, you know, to work on. This has brought hundreds of people from the community out and together to work on this project. Kalama had an election last year where the candidate that ran for mayor on the no methanol platform won. And so if that gives you an indication of how people feel about this project, well, it clearly should. Kalama is a beautiful place. People have a lot of pride in their community. It's a huge fishing community. They have the Kalama River, the Columbia River, amazing river access, amazing river views at most of the homes in Kalama. So people have a lot of pride in where they live, and they chose to live there because of its access to the river and its views of the river. And this is a huge affront to all of those decisions, those calculated decisions people made about their lives. And it's been a pleasure to work there. And if you go down, First Street, which is sort of the main street, a Kalama resident donated her storefront to activists in Kalama who are opposing it. So there's a beautiful mural and a big banner on the storefront. And then you go a little further, and someone who lives on a hill with a, view of the house, view of the town, donated their deck so we could put a 20-foot banner up, So it's really beautiful when you drive around town and see kind of the ways that people are expressing their opposition and their hope for a cleaner future.
Well, come help Kalama on December 13th. And Jasmine, I want to thank you very much for joining us today and sharing all this information.
Thank you.
We've been talking this morning with Jasmine Zimmer-Stuckey, senior organizer with Columbia Riverkeeper, and you've been listening to Locus Focus here on KBO Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPFM in Seattle. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed, or you want your friends or family to hear the show, you can listen to it online or download the audio later this afternoon on our website, kboo.fm/locus-focus. Next week, we'll hear some of the testimony given at the Puget Sound Clean Air Agency public hearing on the draft supplemental environmental impact statement for Tacoma LNG. My engineer is Patsy Kohlberg. I'm Barbara Bernstein. We're going to go out with some music by Marvin Gaye. Thanks for listening.
They used to be now. Where did all the blue skies go? Poison is the wind that blows from the north and south and east. Whoa, mercy, mercy me. All things and what they used to be now. Oil wasted on the oceans and upon our seas. Fish full of mercury. Oh, oh, mercy, mercy.